well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment.
So normally I start off a podcast by asking our guest what the Second Amendment means to them. Because Joe's been on the show a couple times, I'm very familiar with your stand on it, and you're pretty much an absolutist.
Absolutely.
But we are also joined today by Brian.
Hey.
So, Brian, I guess I would like to ask you what the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution means to you.
I think it's a very important one. It definitely means freedom. Can't have freedom with bend down on a knee to the government. So
yeah, gotcha. Are you pretty much an absolutist, or do you believe in some level of restriction?
I'd say I'm probably more absolutist than a lot of people would like to admit.
Mm-hmm.
People who have done white collar crimes and have lost their rights, and I think if you did a white collar crime and have served your time, mm-hmm. there should be ways for you to get your rights back.
Gotcha.
Not only voting, but your Second Amendment and other things. So,
yep, because sometimes, in a lot of cases, many of the rights are immediately reinstalled. You once again have the freedom of speech. Your Fourth Amendment, your Fifth Amendment are reinstated,
mm-hmm.
But not necessarily your rights that are protected by the Second Amendment.
Yep.
I go a little bit, I don't know if you ever heard, I go a little bit further than that. I think that if somebody was a violent offender, and they're released and they served their time, that if they are back in society in good standing, then they should also, you know, have their...
I'm kind of on the fence with that one a little bit.
Yeah, and I understand that. My point comes in that if they are not allowed to carry a firearm...
Then why are they out of prison?
Then should they be out of prison, which
that's
is a separate issue.
Yeah, but there's certain people you can't mentality out of them.
Nope, that's true, and I agree with that, and that's...
They usually end up back in jail anyway.
That's valid. But Lee and I are back at Voodoo Firearms, so thank you guys for having us in. Joe, you reached out very recently to actually ask us to come in and do this podcast, and could you go ahead and let us know why?
So I I had yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, right?
Yeah,
yesterday, Brian called me and said, hey, by the way, we have a customer here who is looking to do a private party transfer, and we started talking about the private party transfer, and he's like, well, he tried to go through the state, and so... What it appears as though the state is back up to their old shenanigans again. If you guys remember, we did a Facebook Live where we caught the state tracking ammo. Well, they're doing it again. And so what they're doing this time is when you go on the Illinois State Police website, because they now require you to do a private party transfer, mm-hmm. and so you have to go.
So this would be a person who's selling their own firearm.
Correct.
They want to transfer it to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they are required to go to the state police and advise them that they're doing this transfer of firearms to another person.
Correct. And okay. And it goes through the Firearm Services Bureau's portal, and they go into there. And so what we discovered was two things that were very, very disturbing, and I think we need to raise the red flag again. So one of them was... Immediately, and you can once you go on to the Illinois State Police website and you click on the transfer firearm button and look at it, immediately it comes up with the asking for the serial number of the firearm.
And that was something that hasn't been done before. It's been years since I've transferred a firearm. I did do them online back then, but I couldn't remember for the life of me if I ever had to enter a serial number. I didn't think that I did because I think that would have stood out for me. But you're saying that now that as soon as you go to do one, the first prompt, the first page is to enter a serial number of the firearm that you're trying to transfer.
Yep. Yeah, they want the make, the model, and the serial number.
And so when did that happen? I don't know, because as an FFL, I don't ever engage
in that party. Right, right. Yes, yes.
So this was the first time I picked up on it.
As an FFL, is that something that's routine for you to have to do you do a transfer?
No. And see, and that's what's really interesting, because as an FFL, all that the state of Illinois knows is that, you know, Joe Schmo bought a handgun. He
pistol, right, or
a handgun, rifle, pistol, shotgun. Those are those. I need to know his first name, last name, middle initial, and his FOID number. And his state of residence. Date of birth and state of residence. That's all the information they know when it comes through us.
Yes, yes. So, and that's what I thought.
And so now...
And let me interrupt, because I think some people that are listening don't necessarily realize that when you fill out the paperwork, that a lot of that information or a receipt does typically not go to the state.
It does.
They do not know what somebody is purchasing.
Those are maintained locally because that's sort of a constitutional issue, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the issue, I think, being go ahead, Josh.
Let me backtrack on that.
Please.
So the Form 4473 is the governmental form that is used by federal firearms licensees to dispose of a firearm to an end user. And so the information that is inputted onto the 4473 is inputted and then stored locally. It's housed locally. It used to have a 10-year shelf life, and then the ATF came out and said, no, we have to maintain it forever. So as long as your FFL stays in business, then the ATF has no idea what they have. And so that's the goal, right, is to the government shouldn't know what we have. That's not – that there's not – there is no registration through the Second Amendment.
And by design.
By design, right.
And disposition of the paperwork or the data in this case, because I'm pretty sure most FFLs are going the data route, right? So it's electronically stored.
And it has to be paper stored.
Oh, okay.
It is electronic, so we do ours all electronically.
Yep.
But we still have to print it and then store it manually.
Okay. If the FFL should go out of business...
All records have to be transferred to the
ATF.
Yep. So now,
where they've been supposedly caught,
right?
They running registration from
pulling the numbers off. Off the 4473. Yeah. So we already know that the ATF is playing dirty, but we didn't know that the state is doing a live data collection of serial numbers. And so, and then what happened was not only did we find out that they're capturing, storing serial numbers, then they're also contacting the manufacturer. And so in this case, they contacted the manufacturer. And in this case, it was a Springfield XD. I'll show everybody here. So it was a Springfield XD Mod 2 and 40 cal. There was nothing special about this firearm whatsoever. It was below capacity, it met all the Illinois registration or
PICA
restrictions, all the Illinois restrictions, not restrictions, all the Illinois restrictions, and the state of Illinois then contacted Springfield, who I don't even know why they did this, but Springfield then imparted the information to the state of Illinois, and told the state of Illinois that it had a threaded barrel. Well, it doesn't have a threaded barrel. It never had a threaded barrel, and I don't know why Springfield told them that, but then the state police sent a transfer not approved back to
They declined it.
They declined it, citing that it had a threaded barrel and that it was a violation of PICA. So not only
did the state there's a lot there.
Right. Yeah. There's so much wrong on that whole one transaction. There's so much wrong. The state of Illinois is collecting... They're collecting information and capturing serial numbers and creating a database. They're determining, based on a serial number, how a gun was manufactured from a manufacturer, which, why is the manufacturer cooperating with the state of Illinois? They're not required.
Well, it's Springfield. They got busted a while back, remember? They were playing dirty pool with Illinois politics.
I don't recall that.
That was got to be, about 10 years ago?
Yeah, about eight, maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So now, I mean, here we are again.
This isn't necessarily Springfield's first time maybe letting down or doing something that a lot of firearm owners would not necessarily appreciate.
Yeah, so.
Well, they're doing business in Illinois.
Right.
And they're a big business in Illinois, and they're in the firearms industry. I could see where that's a hell of a position to be in. I'm not surprised that they have to.
We've chosen to rock the boat.
Yeah.
You know, and you would think that as a manufacturer in Illinois
that you'd
be like, all right, no, guys, like we have some weight here.
Yes,
right?
I see.
I mean, they're if it wasn't for Springfield Armory, Geneseo, Illinois would not exist.
Yeah.
So like they have some weight, and they need to actually be using that weight to move things forward instead of
Cowering?
Cowering. Yep. That's what I was at. I was talking about the Liberty Safe thing.
Yeah.
You know, we're right back to the Liberty Safe thing now with Springfield.
Yeah. Can you remind people what that is?
So Liberty Safe, there was an ATF raid, and under the Biden administration, the ATF called Liberty Safe, and I can't remember who it was. It was in Arkansas, right?
I don't remember what state.
I believe it was Arkansas, and they raided the home.
It's coming back to me a little bit.
Raided the home of he was like a multimillionaire. It wasn't like just some, you know, just some guy. He was a very well-to-do guy, and
that's the guy in Arkansas. That's the guy they ATF killed. He worked for the airport.
Okay. So, but same guy, I think, isn't it?
No, I think it's a different guy.
I think those were separate incidents. But basically, the ATF.
The ATF has done some really sketchy stuff here recently.
They are good for killing people's dogs.
So, basically, the ATF contacted Liberty Safe, gave them the serial number.
Yep.
And Liberty gave them the combination to the safe.
Gave them the way to access the safe,
right.
If I recall correctly, without any sort of warrant.
Yeah, no.
It was a consensual, conversation, and it was, a request, and the request was granted.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people, including myself, that were not very happy with Liberty Safe.
I'll never buy one. You and I
were up in Milwaukee at a USCCA convention. Right when a lot of that had had occurred, and it was the hot topic for the weekend at the convention.
Yeah. So I mean, between that and then the state literally registering the serial numbers on when they're doing the private party transfers. I don't remember. Did we cover all private party, like what that actually means in private party?
I don't.
No.
Okay. No. Yeah, why don't we?
So let's backtrack. Let's backtrack a little bit. So in a private party transfer, so when you come to a dealer or an FFL, Federal Firearms Licensee, when you come to a dealer, you do the 4473 form. It is a dispossession. And I know we've covered this before. So when the gun is manufactured, there's a manufacturing acquisition, then it's disposed. And so all federal firearms licensees, whether you're a manufacturer, or a dealer, or anything in between.
And typically the flow, just so I understand, the flow is the manufacturer makes the firearm. Firearm generally goes to a distributor.
Yes.
Distributor to the FFL.
Yes. Or it could go direct.
Okay.
So a lot of, like, Black Rain Ordnance, for example, is dealer direct.
Got it.
And so it just all depends. But there'll always be a manufacturing acquisition and then a dispossession from the manufacturer. And then the manufacturer will, whoever the next person in line is, will have an acquisition. And then the ultimate dispossession is the 4473 form that gets transferred over to the end user. But, again, that form stays here locally, and they don't have any idea what information that form contains. They don't know what serial number. They don't know what caliber. They don't know
anything. And that, to me, right there, my understanding is, that's a constitutional issue.
Correct.
Right?
Right.
There seems like there's two issues at hand here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an attorney. Yep. I'm just playing one today.
Right.
Right? So it seems like there's a constitutional issue with a database of serial numbers.
Correct.
And names, right?
You got a database of serial numbers, and you also now you have the caliber, you have the name. So the amount of different things, and you've got the cooperation on the part in this particular case, and there may be others out there doing it. This was just brought to our attention yesterday. So there may be others out there that are doing it, but now we have manufacturers cooperating with the state of Illinois on top of it.
Mm-hmm. And then there's it seems like the second issue is one that's more involving PICA, because the denial is based upon a PICA requirement of the law that they're claiming that this firearm doesn't meet.
Which we have already proven is unconstitutional through the district courts of Illinois.
Yep.
And now it's going in front of the Supreme Court. The Department of Justice has said this is an unconstitutional law. You got to get rid of it. We've had 35 states attorney generals.
Yep.
35 states attorney general from the state of Illinois have submitted amicus briefs to the Seventh Circuit saying this is an unconstitutional law. We can't even prosecute this. This is unprosecutable. So now you've got that, and now you just had another gentleman who I cannot remember his name, who literally filed another brief and went through and said he pulled case history from all the different Supreme Court justices and said this is how they will vote, and it will be a 9-0. Mm-hmm. So this is 100% unconstitutional. So now we have a constitutionality problem through the state collecting serial numbers and persons and addresses and all the other stuff. And then we also have the other side of it, which is the cooperation on the side of
Spring. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, that there's actually two constitutional issues. Yeah. One, the database, and two, then being sort of the PICA law itself.
Yeah. So so we've got a lot of different things that are happening, and it should not be happening. It's just with the point, and that's why I wanted to get everybody involved in this. I called you guys immediately, and Brian brought it to my attention. Thank you. And then, you know, we're trying to get it out to everybody so that everybody understands the gravity of this. And we had, like I said before, the state did this back in early January of 23, was it, Brian, or was it this year?
Which part?
The ammunition. I think it might have been this year.
No, that was last year that they did that ammunition transfer thing.
Yeah. And so we caught them
the year before that.
Yeah, it was last year. It was, yeah. So 24? We caught them. Yeah, we caught them doing that where they were tracing what ammunition you were buying. Mm. And so as a result of Voodoo Firearms raising the red flag, it got to the Illinois State Police, it got to Gray Bishop, it got to Freedom Steel.
It got to
everybody in the state of Illinois, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, they removed the caliber for ammunition transfers. Mm. So now the only caliber that's being tracked
is the 50 cal, right, because of PICA.
Right.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
What I'd like to do is jump back to this specific incident here.
Okay.
Because I'd like to
look at it.
No. What I really want to do is address the impact of that, because as far as I'm concerned, or the way I'm looking at it initially, there's two besides the constitutionality issues, which are extremely important to me. Mm. It goes to other, I guess, scenarios also develop. This particular firearm, as I see it, that was attempting to be purchased, is a firearm that is commonly used for self-defense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, where my head goes is that now someone that was doing their due diligence to take the safety of their self and their family into their hands in trying to make sure that they can protect themselves and their families have now been denied that right.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know if this person has any other firearms. This could have been their first one. What they were trying to accomplish has now been denied.
Right.
It is one of the issues as I see it, and that's one. And that's a very important one to me. The other one that I think is also very important is you as a business owner have now been denied the right to sell that firearm, correct?
So the reason why it came to us in the first place is because it was denied on the private party transfer, and so they brought it to an FFL to have the
sort of looking for help. I gotcha, right?
Okay. Yeah. So okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hey, I couldn't get this done. I don't understand what's going on. I'm coming to you because
trying to involve FFL. I got you. Yeah. Okay.
So we were able to identify that it was a completely legal firearm for transfer. It met all of the requirements. I don't know if they gave Springfield the wrong serial number, if Springfield gave them the bad information, whatever, what have you. But the firearm does not have a threaded barrel, does not exceed capacity. It meets all of the requirements of PICA, and yet it was still denied.
So essentially, if I came through the front door and wanted to purchase this firearm, you would sell it to me without an issue.
Yep.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay. Yep. So the second issue that I thought existed maybe doesn't exist, but the initial one,
well,
besides the constitutionality, somebody now that wanted to purchase a firearm, possibly for self-defense, cannot.
Well, let's go one further. So that same scenario you just said about the constitutionality, I'm a dealer. I have an actual license. So now let's say that the state police pull XYZ over, right? Mm-hmm. And they run the serial number on XYZ, and Springfield told them that it has a threaded barrel. They're going to come and investigate my store. They're going to come and investigate me, and I'm at risk for something that was 100% completely legal. So yes, there is implication potential gotcha. to FFLs, and we all need to be aware of this stuff.
Yeah, and that's a pretty major deal. Now I'm assuming, and I hope you could correct me, is we have no idea who at Springfield would have spoken to.
No.
I'm going to try and look into that.
But just here's what I do know. So the information that is on this piece of paper that was provided to the Illinois State Police, they don't have any other way to get the information other than to contact Springfield. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Because they don't know what wholesaler it came from.
Right.
Yeah. So they don't know anything.
Yeah, that's their first stop.
Right. So it was originally disposed of on a 4473. The 4473 sat in somebody, or is probably still sitting in some FFL's filing cabinet somewhere. And then the state police had to find a way to get that information. The only way to get it is to go directly to Springfield.
To Springfield, yep.
So one of the issues here is how long has the state of Illinois been collecting this data?
Great question. And right. I don't know the answer. Like I said, we have not, as a dealer, we don't do this side of it. So I have no idea how much information they've amassed.
And once they have it, how do you unring that bell, right? If at some point they're no longer allowed, well, although technically they're not allowed to now,
right?
But if at some point they stop, that information has still been gathered.
Yeah, and what's the likelihood that the state's going to cough up information or dispose of it properly?
I mean, they've been caught doing shady before,
yeah.
And they still... Oh, yeah, we got rid of it. Yeah, bull.
Well, that was the ATF that did that.
Oh, Illinois got busted.
Did Illinois get that one, too?
Yeah, Illinois got pinched on that.
How long ago was that?
Oh, God, that was years ago.
Was it?
Yeah. Illinois is a very shady state.
Well, and I'll tell you.
They still think there's mobsters running around.
We've done.
It's the Springfield Mafia.
Yeah. We've done several podcasts, obviously, at this point. This will probably be number 26. I believe it's number 26, maybe 27. And a lot of it has been geared around guns specifically. We've had a couple politicians on. But lately I've been reaching out a lot to local politicians on the state level because I want to make sure that those conversations are being had. And 2 years, I posted something on Facebook 2 years in a row now. Our local politician, Larry Walsh, has declined. Worthless. To come on the podcast. His communication director by the name of Josh said, you know, I know you contacted us last year. We denied. We'll bring it back in front of him again. He didn't want to do it again. Said,
you know how you can tell when Larry's lying? His mouth's moving.
Yeah. But I've also been reaching out to plenty others because I think that I don't want to operate in an echo chamber, right? Yeah. I think it's imperative to get some of these politicians on a state level to engage in these conversations. I don't know how optimistic I am to get some, but I have been putting forth a lot of effort to try and make it happen.
I would go so far, Joe, as to say maybe a great place to start would be those state's attorneys general. So reach out to the different state's attorneys for different counties,
mm-hmm.
and talk to them and find out what kind of obstacles are they running into, specifically with PICA, specifically with the SAFE Act and all this other stuff that we've got going on. That would be an interesting perspective, because that's the guys. Those are the guys who have to that have to make this all work, right? So I'd be interested to see what they say.
Yeah,
and sheriffs.
Yeah, sheriffs too.
They're elected.
Yeah.
Both great ideas that I will definitely implement, mm-hmm. while also trying to stick with the politicians, because those are the ones, you know, down south that are, they're either on board with these policies and they are not. And I want to talk to some of the ones that are on board with some of these policies and have backed Governor Pritzker with some of this stuff, and I think it's important to ask them the real questions. I think that's important because stuff like this has to get addressed, and people such as ourselves, it's obviously very concerning too for what I feel is a very legitimate reason. But we we need to get some answers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, we did this once before, and I hope we have the same result. I hope that they remove this from the transfer, from the website. There's no reason that the state of Illinois needs serial numbers other than to register them. And
they're going to claim that they needed to identify the gun as what falling within PICA or not. That's going to be there.
Then they should just simply require all transfers to go through an FFL. If that's their concern, then they should just go that direction.
At one point, there was talk of that.
Yeah, but yeah. This is highly, highly irregular, and in my mind, completely illegal.
And not that I think you're wrongly with what they're saying, but obviously there's errors in there because this did not fall under a restriction
100%
by PICA's standards.
If the manufacturer gave them improper or
inaccurate.
Thank you.
Information.
Inaccurate information. The state's just going to go, well, we thought it didn't fall into PICA because that's what the manufacturer told them.
Sure. Well,
what else has Springfield got wrong?
So that's a great point. So one of the things that I have brought up when other guests have talked about certain levels of restrictions, I'm okay with this or I'm okay with that. This is a perfect example of when you're in favor of a system, when that system is implemented by humans, just by nature, there are going to be errors because people make mistakes.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm 100% understanding of that. But somebody making a mistake should not mean that somebody cannot do something that they are perfectly legally and constitutionally able to do. And that's the issue I have there, is that, somebody most likely made a mistake.
Yeah.
That mistake, again, possibly has stopped somebody from being able to acquire a firearm that they want to use for self-defense.
So let's just verify. So serial number, we're just going to blurt out the last three digits, is 355. Can I see that matches, that serial number?
Yes, sir.
So serial numbers are the same, right? And so according to Springfield, that is a threaded barrel. And as you can clearly see, that is not a threaded barrel.
See, so zero threads.
Zero threads. So, and then to prove the point just a little bit more, we're going to take the barrel out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to.
Take the barrel out, and you can see there are clearly no threads on that barrel.
Correct.
And clearly, the state of Illinois denied a right to a very legally eligible person.
Is it possible that the end user at some point swapped barrels?
It's possible, but it's, again, irrelevant because the state should not have the authority.
Right.
The gun meets all the requirements. State shouldn't have the authority to say no.
So, and that's a great point because it's possible, right?
It could be possible. Right. Yes.
But if somebody did that, maybe they did that to make sure they weren't in violation.
Right.
So that they could sell it.
Right. So that they can carry that without being in violation.
Yes.
Which is what, when the law came out, the state told us all to destroy your magazines, change your barrels. They did all these things.
So
the person did everything they were supposed to do, didn't register the firearm because it was not necessary to be done so, and then they denied the right. So, I mean, we just keep going back to the same thing.
No, thanks for doing that, because that really clears a lot of things up.
Yeah. So, I mean, it goes all back to the same thing over and over and over again. The state does not have the right to do what it's doing and is denying constitutional rights. They are not granted by their government. They are granted by God, and only by God should they be removed.
You know, and that's something I obviously agree with you 100%. And what I see on a very regular basis, and I try not to correct people very often because I don't want to be that guy, but I constantly hear, you know, that's our Second Amendment right. That's our Second Amendment right. That's your right that is protected by the Second Amendment. Right. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily, I don't think it registers with a lot of people that the Second Amendment of the U.S. and Illinois' Constitution does not grant you the right to own a firearm. What it does, what it is supposed to do, is to restrict the government from taking away the right to have a firearm. And there's a big difference there.
Absolutely.
And they took somebody's right away.
They absolutely did.
And that's very frustrating to to somebody like me, to somebody like the, you know, the others in this room here, that's really concerning. That is not the way it is supposed to go.
No, it is. It's often shocking to me. I probably got into firearms when I was, you know, 20, 21 years old, you know, fresh from serving in the military. I've had an issue with this, you know, since then. You know, I'm 57, and this horse ran out of the barn when we allowed Illinois to have a FOID in the first place.
Yeah.
As Illinoisans, we should have never allowed our state to.
Yeah, and
to implement that system.
And you know what's really funny is it's been proven over and over and over again that it was not only unconstitutional, but it was racist in every aspect of it. Mm-hmm. It was intentionally designed to keep firearms out of the black community. That's what it was designed for. Mm. And then they've bastardized it, and like most things, they've convinced everybody that it's a good idea.
Yeah, so now, I mean, if we were talking about this and this was a speech issue, everybody would be up in arms.
Correct.
But because it's a Second Amendment issue instead of a First Amendment issue, we've got all this, you know, oh, well, it doesn't matter. It's not as important.
And that's where that is where I feel, sorry if I cut you off.
Oh, you're good.
Where I feel very strongly that people, society, they need to comprehend that standing up for civil liberties, even if it is one that you don't exercise as an individual, sticking up for them is crucial. It is very, very important. The restrictions that our government is supposed to have on themselves needs to be recognized and fought, and it has been fought for. The part that gets really frustrating for me is how many people feel as though if something doesn't affect them directly, then it's just not important.
Well, you even have that within gun owners. Look at the FUDs out there when it came to wanting to restrict ARs and certain handguns. Well, as long as it doesn't bother my shotgun, I don't really care. I'm not getting involved.
Yeah.
It's a little disappointing. Not, I shouldn't say a little. It's very disappointing to me that the community of gun owners cannot, or at least has not, used its ability as a unit to elect more people that actually help that individual community.
If all the gun owners would stick together, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in.
Correct.
Because we have more than enough to vote the bad out and put decent in.
Sadly, we need higher than an 18% turnout on voting to make a difference. That's our plague as Republicans or as conservatives. As conservatives, that's our plague.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's where it comes back to caring.
Yeah.
And not just burying your head in the sand. I talk to a lot of people on a regular basis, and the phrase I hear on a regular basis is I don't pay attention to that when it comes to politics. Or, you know, that's not something I think about very much. And I think they count on that. I think that, unfortunately, when you get to a certain level of government, they prefer being able to operate in the shadows a little bit.
Yeah.
Where they know that they are better off without us being informed. And it's our job through podcasts, through a store, through, you know, whatever means possible to kind of kick some people in the pants. You know, there's a lot of great organizations out there that really that really put forth a lot of effort to put up the fight that all of us should be putting up. I know the NRA over the years has caught a little bit of flack for, you know, maybe misappropriating some funds or, you know, a little bit too much travel. And I understand that, and I get that, but they're the elephant in the room. They carry a lot of political weight. They know a lot of the people that needs to be contacted. So I'll always support the NRA on a certain level, just because the sheer volume. But there's other organizations out there. Now that
leadership has changed, I think they're starting to make a comeback. And it's going to take a little bit of time before they're back up to where they should be.
Sure. But, like, right off the top of my head, there's probably four or five, like, worthwhile organizations that really do put up the fight. And,
I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment Foundation.
Yeah, Second Amendment Foundation, Firearm Owners, Politician, Gun Owners of America, even Illinois State Rifle Association does a really good job, you know, sticking up for us here in Illinois, signing up days to, you know, what do they call it, lobby days?
I-Gold,
yeah. And supporting those organizations helps us as a community. And I strongly encourage people to look into those organizations and make a donation, become a member, anything like that, because if too many people let this stuff slip away, it will be gone.
Who is it that said you're only one generation away from losing your... losing your society.
Right? I want to say it is Reagan.
I think it was Reagan.
Yeah, you're only one generation away from losing all of your, from losing your freedom.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, to my mind, there was a time, sort of going back to what I was saying, you know, in the 90s, early 90s when I was first getting into firearms, you know, there was a time at which Illinoisans, it seems as though there's been massive noncompliance with the PICA law.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's what it seems. That's what it seems like.
1%. I think it's like 5 or 7.
It seems undeniable.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That should have happened a long time ago with the FOID.
Yeah.
We should never. And that was before my time, obviously, with firearms. But there was a point at which people needed to take a stand, and that supports that sort of slippery slope. Mentality that some of the organizations like the NRA and stuff has, where not another inch, not anything.
So something
because this,
something you probably don't know about that is Illinois is what's called a point of contact state. So when you do, so you'll often hear what's called NICS, right? National Criminal Investigation System or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you'll hear NICS. NICS is a federal level of background check. So what they're doing is they're doing a background check at a federal level, looking to see if you have any federal indictments or anything that will.
And that was that's the phone call, right?
Right. Or would they have? An online thing now also.
Okay.
But you just went through NICS.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Well, then Illinois came in and said, no, we don't think so. We're going to be the point of contact, and you're going to contact us at the Illinois Firearm Services Bureau. And so they then contact NICS on your behalf through an algorithm, whatever, because sometimes we get the automatic approval, right? So they go through NICS, and then they also go through the database in Illinois to check.
So they actually increase their scope a little bit over what's federally mandated.
They're looking at state and local levels to see if there's – if you got a DUI, if you got
a restraining order
or whatever, So they're doing that. Now, speaking of restraining orders, we'll go through this one super, super quick, but it's also super bad, is we have somebody who we both know.
Yep.
You guys also know him. You may or may not be familiar with this situation, but he was in a he's in a relationship with a woman, and she decided one day that she no longer wanted to be in a relationship with him. So she packed her stuff. Now, there was literally no shenanigans. There was no violence. There wasn't even yelling. It was just, I'm leaving, bye. She gets to her dad's house, and dad decides that, now I'm going to say this, but he's a crooked Cicero policeman, retired crooked Cicero policeman. So of the top caliber crookedness in Cicero. So we'll just go there. I'm from Cicero. I'll call it out. Anyway, so dad says, oh, no. We're going to file a restraining order. So they file a restraining order against this person with no legal standing whatsoever. They red flagged them. The state, taking away a right without due process, comes in on a red flag and says, you no longer have a FOID card, revoked his FOID card. He goes to court. The woman says, yeah, I made it all up. The judge kicks it out. It's been 3 months, and the man does not have his rights back yet. The state has not issued his FOID card back to him. We have called. We have used every angle and lever in the Illinois Firearm Services Bureau to try and get this man his card back, and they won't do it. He has a court judgment from a judge saying that this is completely absolved and dropped. There is no case, and they still haven't done it 3 months later.
That's extremely frustrating for me. I can't imagine what he's...
The unconstitutionality of what Illinois is doing, both in the red flag world, in the FOID world, in the PICA world, just in general, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Great points, Joe. Great. And going back to that, just once you open that can of worms with the government, it's, you know, they keep taking.
Yeah.
Wow.
To what end?
Well, complete and utter disarmament and complete reliance on them so that they can have complete control.
Well, that's what gun control is. It's not about guns. It's about control.
Yeah. Tyranny.
Yep. Yeah. Very, very good point, Brian.
Yeah, I agree. I also think, based on the non-compliance that we've seen with PICA, that just won't happen. The fight will always be there. The attempt will always be there. But I strongly believe that although there are way too many people that don't stand up for what is right, I also know there's a lot of people that do. I wish there were more. I encourage there to be more.
Oh, God, yeah.
But I know that there are a lot of people that just won't let that happen.
Well, thanks for bringing this to our attention.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for rallying. That was a very, very quick rally, and I'm grateful that you guys were able to make it out as quick as you did. I know this was very short notice, but I felt like this
It's important.
I felt like this was super important.
Yeah, it is important.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Get this out to everybody.
Great.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, gentlemen.
It'll be up on YouTube and
we'll
all the websites.
We're going to edit. We're going to edit YouTube as well. And I want to make sure that, again, I want to thank 2A Today for coming out and supporting this cause and supporting Voodoo Firearms. You guys have been one of our greatest champions, and we're grateful for all that you guys do in the community.
You deserve it.
And also, I want to bring everybody's attention to the fact that how quickly they did scramble to get here, because it was a matter of hours before Joe and Lee had everything pulled together and ready to go. So, again, guys, great reaction, great everything that you guys are doing. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. Same to you.
Appreciate that. And it's easy to support such great guys.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks. Come buy guns at Voodoo.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Unzip those pockets, people. Come on.